Chapter 14. The Cosmic Game. Exploration of the Farthest Reaches of Human Consciousness. Part 1.
In this encyclopedia, we have focused primarily on the implications of the research of holotropic states of consciousness for psychiatry, psychology, and psychotherapy. However, this work has also generated many interesting philosophical, metaphysical, and spiritual insights. Irrespective of the initial motivation of the person involved in systematic and disciplined self-exploration using holotropic states, serial sessions sooner or later take the form of a deep philosophical and spiritual quest. On numerous occasions, I have seen people whose initial interest in psychedelic sessions or in holotropic breathwork was therapeutic, professional, or artistic, suddenly start asking and answering for themselves the most fundamental questions about existence. This happened when their inner process reached the perinatal and transpersonal levels of the unconscious. How did our universe come into being? Is the world in which we live merely a product of mechanical processes involving inanimate, inert, and reactive matter? Can material reality be explained solely in terms of its fundamental building blocks and the objective laws that govern their interaction? What is the source of order, form, and meaning in the universe? Is it possible that the creation of a universe like ours and its evolution could have occurred without the participation of a superior cosmic intelligence? And if there is a supreme creative principle, what is our relationship to it? How can we come to terms with dilemmas concerning the nature of the universe we live in, such as the finiteness of time and space versus eternity and infinity? What is the relationship between life and matter, and between consciousness and the brain? How can we explain the existence of evil and its overwhelming presence in the universal scheme of things? Is our existence limited to just one lifetime, spanning the period from conception to death? Or does our consciousness survive the biological demise and experience a long series of consecutive incarnations? And what are the practical implications of the answers to the above questions for our everyday life? Who are we? Where did we come from? And where are we going? In the late 1960s, I decided to analyze the records from more than 5,000 psychedelic sessions of my patients and the patients of my colleagues, with a specific focus on their metaphysical experiences and insights. I summarized my findings in a paper, LSD and the Cosmic Game, Outline of Psychedelic Ontology and Cosmology. To my surprise, I found far-reaching agreement among my clients and trainees concerning their insights about basic metaphysical issues. The vision of reality that has emerged from this study did not portray the universe as a mechanical Newtonian supermachine, but as an infinitely complex virtual reality created and permeated by superior cosmic intelligence, absolute consciousness, anima mundi, or the universal mind. The metaphysical insights from psychedelic sessions and the answers to the basic ontological and cosmological questions that this work provided were in sharp conflict with the materialistic worldview and the Newtonian-Cartesian paradigm of Western science. However, they showed far-reaching parallels with the great mystical traditions of the world, for which Aldous Huxley used the term perennial philosophy. They were also surprisingly compatible with the revolutionary advances of modern science that are usually referred to as the new or emerging paradigm. In the following years, as I gained extensive experience with holotropic breathwork and with spontaneously occurring episodes of holotropic states, spiritual emergencies, I realized that the metaphysical insights described in my paper were not limited to psychedelic experiences, but were characteristic for holotropic states in general. In this chapter, I will briefly sketch the basic features of the intriguing vision of reality that has spontaneously emerged in people who have done systematic work with holotropic states of consciousness. A more comprehensive treatment of this subject can be found in my book, The Cosmic Game: Explorations of the Frontiers of Human Consciousness. I have repeatedly heard from my patients and trainees who are involved in self-exploration with serial psychedelic sessions or sessions of holotropic breathwork that they saw this process as an ongoing spiritual journey. These statements prompted me to study spiritual experiences in holotropic states of consciousness and find out if any of them gave my clients and trainees the feeling that they had reached the goal of their spiritual journey. In other words, had they found and obtained what they were looking for? Experience of the immanent divine and of the ensouled universe. If we keep our eyes open during a holotropic state of consciousness, this can result in the experience of the immanent divine, a profoundly transformed perception of everyday reality. A person having this form of spiritual experience sees people, animals, and inanimate objects in the environment as radiant manifestations of cosmic creative energy, and realizes that the boundaries between them are illusory and unreal. This is a direct experience of nature as God, Baruch Spinoza's Deus sive natura. We also discover that underlying the world of separation is a unified, undivided field of cosmic creative energy. Using the analogy with television, this experience could be likened to a situation where a black and white picture suddenly changes into one in vivid, living color. In both situations, many of the old elements of the world remain the same. We can still recognize people, animals, and trees, but the way we perceive them is radically redefined by the addition of a new dimension. In the TV picture, this new dimension is color, while in the experience of the immanent divine, it is a sense of numinosity, a feeling of sacredness. The word numinous is an expression that C.G. Jung borrowed from the German theologian and religious scholar Rudolf Otto. Jung preferred to use this neutral expression instead of terms like religious, mystical, spiritual, sacred, or magical, which have been used in many different contexts and can be easily misunderstood. As we saw earlier, in holotropic states, we can also have authentic and convincing experiences of conscious identification with animals, plants, and even inorganic materials. Following experiences of the immanent divine, our worldview expands, and we begin to understand the beliefs of animistic cultures, which see the entire universe as being conscious and ensouled. From their perspective, not only all the animals, but also the trees, the rivers, the mountains, the sun, the moon, and the stars appear to be conscious beings. Having this experience, we would not necessarily accept and embrace the worldview of any of these cultures in all its aspects and completely forget and ignore all the findings of Western science. However, we have to add an important empirical fact to our worldview, Everything that we experience in the holotropic state of consciousness as an object has in the holotropic state a subjective experiential counterpart. People who have the experience of the immanent divine and discover that they can experience themselves as other people, animals, and various aspects of the universe also understand the basic tenet of the great Eastern spiritual philosophies, that everything in the universe is a manifestation of cosmic consciousness and the universal creative principle. They simply call it by different names: Brahman, the Tao, or the Buddha. As far as the search for the ultimate is concerned, people who have had the experiences described previously feel that they have made an important step on the spiritual journey, but do not think that they have reached its final goal. They understand that there is more to discover. Experience of the transcendent divine and of the archetypal realm. The experiences of the transcendent divine bring into consciousness visions of and encounters with personages and creatures from mythologies of various cultures of the world, complex archetypal sequences, and visits to the abodes of the beyond, as described in these traditions: heavens, paradises, hells, and other fantastic mythic scenarios. In this type of spiritual experience, entirely new worlds, which are not part of everyday reality, seem to unfold or explicate, to borrow terms from David Bohm, from another level or order of reality into our perceptual field. If we use the analogy with television as described earlier, this would be like a surprising discovery that different channels exist, each one radically different than the one we've been watching and experiencing every day of our lives. In this type of experience, we discover that our psyche has access to entire pantheons of mythological figures, as well as the domains that they inhabit. A particularly convincing proof of the authenticity of these experiences is the fact that, like other transpersonal phenomena, they can bring us new and accurate information about the figures and realms involved. The nature, scope, and quality of this information often by far surpasses our previous intellectual knowledge concerning these mythologies. Observations of this kind led C.G. Jung to the assumption that, besides the individual unconscious as described by Sigmund Freud, we also have a collective unconscious that connects us with the entire cultural heritage of humanity. According to Jung, these are manifestations of archetypes, primordial universal patterns that represent intrinsic constituents of the collective unconscious. For many people, the first encounter with the sacred dimensions of existence occurs in the context of the death-rebirth process, when the memories of different stages of birth are accompanied by visions of analogous scenes from the archetypal domain of the collective unconscious. However, the full connection with the spiritual realm is made when the process moves to the transpersonal level of the psyche. When that happens, various spiritual experiences appear independently of the fetal sequences in their pure forms. In some instances, the holotropic process bypasses the biographical and perinatal levels altogether and provides direct access to the transpersonal realm. Holotropic states of consciousness can provide deep insights into the worldviews of ancient and native cultures, which believe that the cosmos is populated with and governed by various blissful and wrathful deities. The imagery of such experiences is drawn from the collective unconscious and can feature mythological figures and themes from any culture in the entire history of humanity, including those of which we have no intellectual knowledge. If we feel reluctant to confirm and accept the worldview of ancient and native cultures, we might prefer to use modern terminology, such as numinous instead of sacred, and archetypal figures instead of deities and daemons. We can no longer dismiss these experiences as mere hallucinations or fantasies. Deep personal experiences of this realm help us realize that the images of the cosmos found in pre-industrial societies are not based on ignorance, superstition, primitive magical thinking, or psychotic visions, but on authentic experiences of alternate realities. To distinguish these phenomena from hallucinatory or imaginary experiences, which do not have any objective basis, Jungian psychologists refer to these transphenomenal realities as imaginal. French scholar, philosopher, and mystic Henri Corbin, who first used the term mundus imaginalis, was inspired by his study of Islamic mystical literature. Islamic theologians called the imaginal world, where everything existing in the sensory world has its analog, alam al-mithal, or the eighth clime, to distinguish it from the seven climates, regions of traditional Islamic geography. The imaginal world possesses spatial and temporal dimensions, forms and colors, but these are not perceptible to our senses as properties of physical objects. Yet this realm is in every respect as fully ontologically real as the material world that is perceived by our sensory organs, and experiences of it can be verified by consensual validation by other people. Archetypal experiences have three-dimensional space of their own and unfold in linear time. However, what they miss in comparison with the material world is spatial and temporal cohesion. For example, we can assess the distance between Prague and Baltimore and determine in which direction Prague can be found. We cannot do the same with Shiva's heaven or Valhalla, the resting place built by the god Wotan for Nordic warriors killed in battle. Similarly, we can determine how many years elapsed between the American Civil War and the Russian Bolshevik Revolution. We could not answer the same question if it were asked about the Battle of the Titans against the Olympic gods, and Ragnarok, Twilight of the Gods, the final battle in Nordic mythology. Archetypal figures fall into several categories, as we have seen. The first one includes personages embodying various universal roles and principles. These include the Great Mother Goddess, the Terrible Mother Goddess, the Wise Old Man, the Eternal Youths, the Lovers, Death, the Trickster, the Anima and Animus, and the Shadow. The second major category of archetypal figures involves deities and demons related to a specific culture, geographical area, or historical period. For example, instead of a generalized personification of the Great Mother Goddess, we can experience one of her specific cultural forms, such as the Christian Virgin Mary, Sumerian Inanna, Egyptian Isis, Greek Hera, Hindu Lakshmi or Parvati. It is important to remember that the range of archetypal encounters that individuals in holotropic states can access is not limited by their beliefs, knowledge, or cultural heritage. Resembling something like a laboratory proof of Jung's theory of the collective unconscious, these experiences can be drawn from the mythology of any culture in human history. For the purpose of our discussion, it is important to distinguish the universal form of spirituality, which emerges spontaneously in holotropic states of consciousness, from religion, Spirituality involves a special kind of relationship between the individual and the cosmos, and is in its essence a personal and private affair. By comparison, organized religion involves institutionalized group activity that takes place in a designated location and features a system of appointed officials who may or may not have had their own personal experiences of spiritual realities. The encounters with archetypal figures can be emotionally overwhelming and often bring new and detailed information that is independent of the experiencing person's racial, cultural, and educational background, as well as previous intellectual knowledge of the respective mythologies. The experiences of blissful and terrifying deities are accompanied by extremely intense emotions, ranging from ecstatic rapture to paralyzing metaphysical terror. People who experience these encounters usually view these archetypal figures with great awe and respect, and see them as beings that belong to a superior order, are endowed with extraordinary energies and power, and have the capacity to shape events in our material world. They thus share the attitude of many pre-industrial cultures that believe in the existence of deities and demons. However, people who have such experiences usually do not confuse the archetypal figures with the supreme principle in the universe, nor do they claim that they have gained the ultimate understanding of existence. They typically experience these deities as creations of a superior power that transcends them. This insight echoes Joseph Campbell's idea that a useful deity should be transparent to the transcendent. They should point to the absolute and function as bridges to it, but not be confused with it. When we are involved in systematic self-exploration or spiritual practice, it is important to avoid the pitfall of making a particular deity opaque and seeing it as the supreme cosmic force, rather than a window into the absolute. Campbell warned that mistaking a specific archetypal image for the ultimate source of creation, or for its only true representation, leads to idolatry, a divisive and dangerous mistake that is widespread in the history of religion. It unites people who share the same belief and are willing to worship in a particular way, but sets this group against other ones that have chosen a different representation of the divine. They might then try to convert others or conquer and eliminate them. By contrast, a genuine religion is universal, all-inclusive, and all-encompassing. It has to transcend specific culture-bound archetypal images and focus on the ultimate source of all forms. The most important question in the world of religion is thus the nature of the supreme principle in the universe. Experience of the supreme cosmic principle. Individuals involved in systematic self-exploration with the use of holotropic states of consciousness repeatedly describe this process as a philosophical and spiritual quest. As mentioned earlier, this inspired me to search the records from psychedelic and holotropic breathwork sessions, as well as reports from people who are undergoing spiritual emergency, for experiences which would convey the sense that this quest had reached its final destination. I found out that people whose experience of the absolute fully satisfied their spiritual longing typically did not see any specific figurative images. When they felt that they had attained the goal of their mystical and philosophical quest, their descriptions of the supreme principle were highly abstract and strikingly similar. Those who reported such an ultimate revelation were in quite remarkable agreement when describing the experiential characteristics of this state. They reported that the experience of the Supreme involved transcendence of all the limitations of the analytical mind, all rational categories, and the constraints of ordinary logic. This experience was not bound by the usual limitations of three-dimensional space and linear time as we understand them. It also contained all conceivable polarities in an inseparable amalgam and thus transcended dualities of any kind. Time after time, my clients and trainees compared the absolute to a radiant source of light of unimaginable intensity. But they also emphasized that it differed in some significant aspects from any form of light that we know in the material world. To describe the absolute as light, as much as it seems appropriate in a certain sense, entirely misses some of its essential characteristics. In particular, it misses the fact that it is also an immense and unfathomable field of consciousness that is endowed with infinite intelligence and profound creativity. Another attribute that is regularly mentioned is that it definitely has distinct personal characteristics and an exquisite sense of humor, cosmic humor. The supreme cosmic principle can be experienced in two different ways. Sometimes all personal boundaries dissolve or are drastically obliterated, and we completely merge with the divine source, becoming indistinguishable from it. Other times we maintain the sense of separate identity, assuming the role of an astonished observer who is witnessing, as if from outside, the mysterium tremendum of existence. We might also assume a filial attitude to the divine, experiencing it as a father or mother. Following the example of Saint Teresa of Avila, the bhaktas, or the mystics, such as described by the 13th century Persian transcendental poet Rumi, we might also feel the ecstasy of an enraptured lover, experiencing the divine as the beloved. Spiritual literature of all ages abounds in descriptions of both types of experiences of the divine. A good historical example is the exchange between Sri Ramana Maharshi, Hindu sage and teacher of Advaita Vedanta, non-dual meditation, and Sri Ramakrishna, a bhakta worshipper of the goddess Kali. Sri Ramana Maharshi illustrated the non-dual experience through the story of a sugar doll who went for a swim in the ocean because she wanted to experience its depth and completely dissolved in its water. Sri Ramakrishna countered, "I want to taste sugar. I don't want to be sugar." Modern consciousness research suggests that both ways of experiencing the absolute represent major spiritual breakthroughs, leading to positive changes in personality structure, ecstatic feelings of peace and security, and access to higher meaning. The cosmic abyss, supracosmic and metacosmic void. The encounter with absolute consciousness or identification with it is not the only way to experience the supreme creative principle of the cosmos or the ultimate reality. The second type of experience that seems to satisfy those who search for ultimate answers is particularly surprising, since it has no specific content. It is the identification with cosmic emptiness and nothingness, as described in mystical literature as the void. It is important to emphasize that not every experience of emptiness that we can encounter in holotropic states qualifies as the void. People very often use this term to describe an unpleasant lack of feeling, initiative, content, or meaning. To deserve the name void, this state has to meet very specific criteria. When we encounter the void, we feel that it is a primordial emptiness of cosmic proportions and relevance. We become pure consciousness, aware of this absolute nothingness. However, at the same time, we have a strange paradoxical sense of its essential fullness. This cosmic vacuum is also a plenum, since nothing seems to be missing in it. While it does not contain anything in a concrete, manifest form, it seems to contain all of existence in a potential form. The void transcends the usual categories of time and space. It is unchangeable and lies beyond all dichotomies and polarities, such as light and darkness, good and evil, stability and motion, microcosm and macrocosm, agony and ecstasy, singularity and plurality, form and emptiness, and even existence and non-existence. Some people call it the supracosmic and metacosmic void, indicating that this primordial emptiness and nothingness appears to be the principle that underlies the phenomenal world as we know it, creates it, and at the same time is superordinated to it. This metaphysical vacuum, pregnant with infinite potential, appears to be the cradle of all being, the ultimate source of existence. The cosmic abyss has the intelligence, creativity, and immense energy necessary to create universes. The creation of all phenomenal worlds is then the realization and concretization of its pre-existing, inherent potentialities. It is impossible to convey in words how experientially convincing and logical these paradoxical answers are to the most basic and profound questions about existence. Full understanding of these extraordinary states requires direct personal experience. Hungarian-Italian researcher Ervin Laszlo, the world's foremost system theorist and philosopher of science, called this mysterious realm beyond space and time the Akashic Holofield. In one of his recent books, What is Reality? The New Map of Cosmos, Consciousness, and Existence, Laszlo brings together a rich array of scientific fields, philosophy, and metaphysics, and proposes a brilliant new paradigm. Laszlo's connectivity hypothesis offers a solution for many paradoxes that plague various disciplines of modern Western science and provides a bridge between science and spirituality. The Beyond Within. In systematic spiritual practice involving holotropic states of consciousness, we can repeatedly transcend the ordinary boundaries of the body-ego. In this process, we also discover that any boundaries in the material universe and in other realities are ultimately arbitrary and negotiable. By shedding the limitations of the rational mind and the straitjacket of common sense and everyday logic, we can break through many separating barriers, expand our consciousness to normally unimaginable dimensions, and eventually experience union and identity with the transcendental source of all being, known in spiritual literature by many different names. When we reach experiential identification with the Absolute, we realize that our own being is ultimately commensurate with the entire field of cosmic creative energy, with all of existence. The recognition of our own divine nature, our identity with the cosmic source, is the most important discovery we can make during the process of deep self-exploration. This is the essence of the famous answer to the question about our true identity found in the ancient Indian Chandogya Upanishad, Tat Tvam Asi. The literal translation of this sentence is, "Thou art that," meaning, "You are of divine nature," or "You are Godhead." It reveals that our everyday identification with the skin-encapsulated ego, embodied individual consciousness, or name and form, namarupa, is an illusion, and that our true nature is our identity with the entire field of cosmic creative energy, Atman Brahman. At the beginning of this encyclopedia, we discussed that the revelation concerning the identity of the individual with the divine is the ultimate secret that lies at the core of all great spiritual traditions. We have illustrated this with many concrete examples from the great religions of the world. Words for the Ineffable. The supreme cosmic principle can be directly experienced in holotropic states of consciousness, but it eludes any attempts at adequate description or explanation. The language that we use to communicate about matters of daily life simply is not adequate for this task. Individuals who have had this experience seem to agree that it is ineffable. Words and the structure of our language are painfully inappropriate tools to describe its nature and dimensions, particularly to those who have not experienced it. Lao Tzu, the legendary Chinese Taoist philosopher, expressed it very succinctly in his classic text, Tao Te Ching. "The Tao that can be told of is not the eternal Tao. The name that can be named is not the eternal name." Any attempts at describing transcendental experiences have to rely on the words of the colloquial language that has been developed to communicate about objects and activities as we experience them in the ordinary state of consciousness. For this reason, language proves to be inappropriate and inadequate when we want to talk about the experiences and insights encountered in various holotropic states of consciousness. This is particularly true when our experiences focus on the ultimate problems of existence, such as the void, absolute consciousness, and creation. Those who are familiar with Eastern spiritual philosophies often resort to words from various Asian languages when describing their spiritual experiences and insights. They use Sanskrit, Tibetan, Chinese, or Japanese terms. These languages were developed in cultures with great sophistication in regard to holotropic states and spiritual experiences. Unlike the Western languages, they contain many technical terms specifically describing nuances of the mystical experiences and related issues, such as nirvikalpa and salvikalpa samadhi, sunyata, kensho, satori, dao, nirvana, kundalini, chi or ki energy, bardo, anatta, samsara, maya, and avidya. Ultimately, though, even these words can be understood only by those who have had the corresponding experiences. Poetry, although still a highly imperfect tool, seems to be a more adequate and appropriate means for conveying the essence of spiritual experiences and for communicating about transcendental realities. For this reason, many of the great visionaries and religious teachers resorted to poetry while sharing their metaphysical insights. Many people who have experienced transcendental states recall and quote pertinent passages from the work of visionary poets, such as Omar Khayyam, Rumi, Khalil Gibran, Kabir, Princess Mirabai, Sri Aurobindo, William Blake, D.H. Lawrence, Rainer Maria Rilke, Walt Whitman, or William Butler Yeats. The process of creation. People who in their holotropic states of consciousness experience the cosmic creative principle often envision the process of creation and become fascinated by its immense scale and grand design. They try to understand the nature of the impulse that moves the divine to abandon its pristine state and take on the formidable task of creating what seems to be an infinite number of phenomenal worlds. They seem to agree that these worlds are created through an orchestration of experiences, and that they are virtual rather than material. However, the insights concerning why creation happens and what is the motivation of the divine to generate countless phenomenal realities within itself and from itself contain some interesting contradictions. One important category of these insights emphasizes the fantastic inner richness and inconceivable creative potential of absolute consciousness. The cosmic source is so overabundant and overflowing with possibilities that it simply has to give itself expression in the creative act. Another group of insights revealed that absolute consciousness also seeks, in the process of creation, something that it lacks and misses in its original pristine state. From an ordinary perspective, these two categories of insights might seem to contradict each other. In holotropic states, this conflict disappears, and the two seeming opposites can easily coexist and actually complement each other. A biologist participating in our training program was reflecting about the impulse of the divine to create, as he had experienced it in his LSD session, and found some distant similarity between this process and what he had seen when he observed fertilized eggs. The enormous creative potential of the fertilized egg was at first dormant. Then the seeming inertia of the protoplasm was suddenly interrupted by an impulse, which created ripples and initiated the process of cellular division and embryonic growth. Another of my clients compared the process that leads to cosmic creation with the state of mind of an artist, who experiences inspiration and conceives a great work of art, which then assumes a life of its own. Other descriptions emphasize the immense desire of the divine to get to know itself and to discover, explore, and experience its hidden potential. This can only be done by exteriorization and manifestation of all the latent possibilities in the form of a concrete creative act. It requires polarization into subject and object, the experiencer and the experienced, the observer and the observed. A similar idea can be found in medieval Kabbalistic scriptures, according to which God's motive for creation is that face wants to behold face, or God wants to see God. Additional important dimensions of the creative process that have often been emphasized are the playfulness, self-delectation, and cosmic humor of the Creator. These are elements that have been described best in ancient Hindu texts, which talk about the universe and existence as lila, or divine play. According to this view, creation is an intricate, infinitely complex cosmic game that the Godhead, Brahman, creates from itself and within itself. Creation can also be viewed as a colossal experiment that expresses the immense curiosity of absolute consciousness, a passion that is analogous to the infatuation of a scientist who dedicates his or her life to exploration and research. Some people who have experienced insights into the motives for creation also point out its aesthetic side, as we saw earlier. From this perspective, the universe we live in and all the experiential realities in other dimensions also appear to be ultimate works of art. The impulse to create them can be likened to the inspiration and creative passion of the supreme artist. As we also saw, sometimes the insights concerning the forces underlying creation do not reflect overflowing abundance, richness, and mastery of the cosmic creative principle, but rather absence or lack of something important, deficiency, need, or desire. For example, it is possible to discover that in spite of the immensity and perfection of its state of being, absolute consciousness realizes that it is alone. This loneliness finds its expression in an abysmal yearning for partnership, communication and sharing, giving and receiving love, a kind of divine longing. Another important motivating force behind the creative process that has occasionally been reported in this category is the divine source's primordial craving for the experiences that characterize the material world. According to these insights, spirit has a profound desire to experience what is opposite and contrary to its own nature. It wants to explore all the qualities that, in its pristine nature, it does not have, and to become everything that it is not, being eternal, infinite, unlimited, and ethereal. It longs for the ephemeral, impermanent, transient, limited by time and space, solid, tangible, concrete, and corporeal. This aspect of the creative process is beautifully illustrated in the Aztec Nahuatl Codex Borgia, in a painting showing the dynamic, complementary dance of two figures, the plumed serpent Quetzalcoatl, representing spirit, and Tezcatlipoca, smoking mirror, representing matter. Another important motive for creation that is occasionally mentioned is the element of monotony. However immense and glorious the experience of the divine might appear from the human perspective, for the divine, it will always be the same, and therefore monotonous. Creation can then be seen as a titanic effort expressing a transcendental longing for change, action, movement, drama, and surprise. In medieval Kabbalistic scriptures, we can read that one of the motives that God has for creation is divine boredom. All of those who have been fortunate enough to experience profound insights into the cosmic laboratory of creation seem to agree that anything that they can say about this level of reality cannot possibly do justice to what they have witnessed. The monumental impulse of unimaginable proportions that is responsible for creating the worlds of phenomena seems to contain all the above elements, however paradoxical they might appear to our common sense, and many more. It is clear that, in spite of all our efforts to comprehend and describe creation, the nature of the creative principle and of the process of creation remains shrouded in unfathomable mystery. It should be mentioned again that the language we are using presents a special problem for expressing what we have experienced in transcendental realms. The best we can do is to find some meek parallels and approximations in feelings that we know from our everyday life. A useful practice developed by psychiatric patients trying to describe their transpersonal experiences is to capitalize the first letters of the words they are choosing in order for them to ward off the banality of their everyday meaning, and to indicate the cosmic grandeur of the feelings and states they are describing. I have adopted this practice in this section when I refer to divine loneliness, love, longing, craving, or boredom. Besides the revelations concerning the motives or reasons for creation, the why of creation, the experiences in holotropic states often bring illuminating insights into the specific dynamics and mechanisms of the creative process, the how of creation. These are related to the technology of consciousness that generates experiences with different sensory characteristics, and by orchestrating them in a systematic and coherent way, creates virtual realities. Although the descriptions of these insights vary in terms of details, language, and metaphors used to illustrate them, they typically distinguish two interrelated and mutually complementary processes that are involved in creating the worlds of phenomena. The first of these is the activity that splits the original undifferentiated unity of absolute consciousness into infinite numbers of derived units of consciousness. The divine engages in a creative play that involves complicated sequences of divisions, fragmentations, and differentiations. This results in experiential worlds that contain countless separate entities endowed with specific forms of consciousness, which have a convincing sense of self-awareness and autonomy. There seems to be general agreement that these come into being through multiple divisions and subdivisions of the originally undivided field of cosmic consciousness. The divine thus does not create something outside of itself, but through divisions and transformations, creates within the field of its own being. The second important element in the process of creation is a unique form of partitioning, dissociation, or forgetting, through which the filial conscious entities progressively and increasingly lose contact with their original source and the awareness of their pristine nature. They also develop a sense of individual identity and absolute separateness from each other. In the final stages of this process, intangible but relatively impermeable screens exist between these split-off units and also between each of them and the original undifferentiated pool of absolute consciousness. The relationship between absolute consciousness and its parts is unique and complex and cannot be understood in terms of conventional thinking. Aristotelian logic and our common sense tell us that a part cannot simultaneously be the whole, and that the whole, being an assembly of its parts, has to be larger than any of its components and cannot be a part. In the universal fabric, separate units of consciousness, in spite of their individuality and specific differences, remain on another level essentially identical with their source and with each other. They have a paradoxical nature, being wholes and parts at the same time. A quote from the mysterious emerald tablet, Tabula Smaragdina of Hermes Trismegistus, "That which is below corresponds to that which is above, and that which is above corresponds to that which is below, to accomplish the miracles of the one thing," became the inspiration of many esoteric schools, including Hermeticism, alchemy, astrology, Kabbalah, and Tantra. Their basic tenet is that each human being is a microcosm that contains the macrocosm. As above, so below. And as without, so within. A beautiful example of the relationship between Buddha nature and all creations can be found in the teachings of Avatamsaka, Huayan Buddhism, about mutual interpenetration. Its basic idea is expressed very succinctly in four sentences: one in one in many in many, and many in one. The famous image used to illustrate the situation is the necklace in Indra's heaven, in which pearls are arranged in such a way that each of them reflects all the others. The following story is a more elaborate and graphic explanation of this. Chinese Empress Wu had difficulties understanding the complex teachings of Huayan Buddhism and asked Zen Master Fatzeng to explain it to her. Fatzeng took her into a hall in which all walls, the ceiling, and the floor were covered with mirrors. He then lit a candle hanging in the middle of the room. In the next moment, they were surrounded by an infinite number of candles. Fatzeng commented, "This is how the One is contained in all the creations." He then reached into his pocket and took out a crystal ball. All these candles were now reflected in a single crystal. "And this is how many are contained in the One. See how in the ultimate reality, the infinitely small contains the infinitely large, and the infinitely large, the infinitely small, without obstruction." He then apologized for using a simple static model to explain what is happening in an infinitely large and complex dynamic system. As we heard in Chapter 8, the basic tenet of esoteric schools regarding the relationship between the microcosm and macrocosm, which in the past seemed absurd and incomprehensible, received unexpected scientific support through the invention of optical holography. The insights from the research of holotropic states of consciousness portray existence as an astonishing play of the cosmic creative principle that transcends time, space, linear causality, and polarities of any kind. From this perspective, the worlds of phenomena, including the material world, appear to be virtual realities generated by a technology of consciousness, by an infinitely complex orchestration of experiences. They exist on many different levels of reality, ranging from the undifferentiated absolute consciousness through pantheons of archetypal beings, to countless humans, animals, and plants existing in the world of matter.